This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. It's the second Saturday of the month. It's the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club. We are being all romantic today. It's romance with three authors. Chris Bryant, who's my co-host today. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Elizabeth.
And we'll have Georgia Beers and Melissa Braden. We're going to start. I'm going to ask my co-host a question, and then when we have Georgia and Melissa, we'll ask them. What is a romance that you read that stayed with you? Can be one from your childhood, teen years, young adult. And I'll give you an example. For me, Jane Eyre was one that I really enjoyed, the Charlotte Bronte. You know, you had the madwoman in the attic, and you had the lord of the manor and this poor governess, and I just thought that was great.
My first book that really did something for me
was Sidney Sheldon. Of all the people, of all the writers, Sidney Sheldon was the one that really made me think about writing, and I just love the romance and the danger that he wrote.
Georgia, are you on?
I am. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. And
Melissa?
I'm here. Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Well, I just asked a question that we'll start with, and that is, maybe you heard it, what romance did you read as a child, a young adult recently that really stayed with you and made a difference? Georgia, I'll start with you.
You know, that's an interesting question, and I didn't actually... Romance wasn't my go-to type of book, my go-to genre. When I was younger, I can tell you that all of my Nancy Drew books stayed with me, though. But as far as romance went, I think some of the first romances I read were Danielle Steele, because I would get them from my mom. And I specifically remember, these were not Danielle Steele, but I remember Mistral's Daughter and Scruples. And I think Mistral's Daughter was, I don't remember who wrote that, but they were both romances and also rather graphic, and so I got quite an education reading both of those. But they did stay with me. I still remember to this day sneaking them away and sitting in a corner and reading them, probably mortifying my mother.
What about you, Melissa?
Oh, I would say that romance was my go-to genre from just out of the gate. Like, the second you made me aware that romance was a thing, I was all in, and I kind of feel like that love affair has not ended. Kind of like Georgia, I was stealing books from others, and my sister, who is about 8 years older than me, was reading romance novels, and I stole Danielle Steele's Star off of her shelf and would lock myself away and read it without permission. I knew if I asked my mom, she'd say no, so it was just best not to even ask. So just getting lost in that journey. I remember the main character's name was Crystal. I was 12 years old, and I can still tell you that. It had that big of an impact on me. And from there, it was just about gobbling them up any chance that I got. I remember in college reading Judith McNaught and going through her whole Regency catalog and then her contemporaries. And even the people on the floor in my dorm room, we were passing this tattered novel up and down the hallway as one girl would read it after another. So I think it was only natural that I would then write romance as my genre. Choice.
That makes sense. And Chris is my co-host today, so we're going to trade off asking questions. So, Chris,
I've met her before.
Yeah, I believe you have.
You. I was going to add to that my mom is German, so she never read American novels. She only had her little German novels. So my options were my dad's Western stories or Sidney Sheldon. I didn't hit Danielle Steele until I was in high school.
My parents had Agatha Christie and Thomas Costain historical novels, so I really wasn't familiar with romance until I was a young adult. Chris, what question do you have?
Well, I have actually a question for each of you, and then the rest of my questions are for both of you. So, Melissa, you've written a series in standalone books. Which do you prefer and
yes.
why?
I like writing the standalones, and I like writing the first book of the series. I always am so excited about jumping into a new series, which I'm literally in that spot right now. I'm about to start writing a new one in the next couple of weeks, and I can't wait to jump in and build the world and get to know the characters, and I'm so all in on the first one. But I think I get a little antsy once we get further into the series, and I'm like always looking ahead, which is something I'm working on, because I always miss the series once I'm done writing it, so I'm trying to enjoy the ride a little bit more. But I think once I'm in the middle of a series, it gets harder for me. And then the standalones go so fast that you don't have a chance to get bored with the setting. So I, you know, gobble those up as a writer.
Okay. And Georgia, you're kind of the exact opposite. You've written standalone books. How many now?
25, and I have written one series.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, you wrote the Puppy Love series.
Oh,
you can't forget that.
That's true. Of all the things, puppies. Come on, that's what I love.
Not hold it against you, Chris. I will not hold it against you.
Thank you. Are you planning on any future series or stick with
I actually am, yeah. Yeah,
yes.
I'm playing with one in my head right now. I don't have a whole lot of detail, so I don't have a lot to tell you, but I feel like it's time that I jump into that again. I'm not nearly as well-versed at writing a series as Melissa is, so it's a little more daunting for me.
Yeah, there's
but
no way I could do one.
I do remember
when
I wrote the Puppy Love series that I liked the idea of having multiple books take place in the same spot, in the same setting, and that way I could focus more on the people. So I look forward to that part of it, but I'm still ironing it out. It's going to be a little while first.
You mentioned setting. I have a question. What usually comes first for you, and this is for Chris as well, is it the characters? Is it the setting? Do you think of a situation? Is it a particular inspiration? What is it that comes first? Georgia?
You know, it can be any or all of those things for me. I've had everything that you've mentioned, I've had that be the first thing for me. It tends, I think, most often for me to be the occupations of my characters. I'm not sure why, but I tend to try to come up with occupations that are very opposite or that would be inherently problematic for two women who are trying to be love interests for one another. But sometimes it's the setting. That's very true. You know, when I did the Puppy Love series, I had the setting in my head before I had anything else in my head. So I think for me it varies a little bit. I don't know how it is for the other two, but it changes. It shifts and it changes, and it could be any of those things you mentioned on any given day.
Makes sense. Melissa, what about you?
I think for me it's usually the setting, or it is the romance trope that I might just be a little bit in love with in that moment. I know that before I set out to write Beautiful Dreamer, which is the one I have out now, I knew that I wanted to write a homecoming romance where somebody comes back to their town that they grew up in. And so once I started with that little nugget, it was just about kind of coloring it. Okay, well, who is that going to be? Who's that girl going to be? And who is she going to fall for? What's that character like? And so it starts to flesh itself out a little bit more. Or it might be like, I want to write the big city. And then you take that first step and then figure out the details as you go. I think that's most traditional for me. Not to say I haven't started with the character before, but it's just not my go-to.
Chris? I think I write situational. For example, whirlwind romance. I'm just scared to death and petrified of tornadoes and bad weather, and I watch everything on TV about tornadoes and storm chasing, and I finally decided how exciting would it be to actually have a romance that comes out of storm chasing. So I tend to go for kind of backwards. I don't really know my characters. I'll think of a situation and then go from there and build it that way.
Do you have a question for Georgia and Melissa?
I do. So I know that you have writing dates. I know sometimes Georgia comes and visits, and I want to know who's more disciplined out of both of you.
Well, clearly me.
I'm going to guess it's Georgia, but that's just my...
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, now. I'll let Georgia feel that question.
It's definitely me, but only because I think that I am slightly less easily distracted than Melissa is. She's kind of
a little bit like
the dog Doug in the movie Up. That's like talking away and then goes
squirrel,
and the attention is over here. That's kind of her. She writes like she's a wonderful writer, as you both know, and she gets stuff done. But boy, she's all over the place. And sometimes when we're together, I have to reel her in, and I'll say, why are you looking at your phone? What are you doing on Facebook? And then she gives me a look, and then she'll start writing again. But that's kind of how it works when we have a writing date together.
Melissa, do you want to defend yourself?
It's a struggle. It's true. I wish I could argue that point, but it's very true. I struggle with forcing myself to work when there are so many fantastic things I could be doing. And not to say that writing isn't fantastic, but it's forcing myself to maybe make demands of my brain when I'd rather be frolicking in the sunshine or having a glass of rosé or getting the latest gossip. So I think, you know, when I'm on my own, I have to strip everything away from myself. I have to put my phone across the room. I have to turn the internet off. I can't tip myself of it anyway because I will latch onto it. So when we're together, I think it is very apparent that one of us is capable of really buckling down and working, and the other one is kind of a clown.
I would like to point out, Melissa, that you have a perfect excuse as a distraction in that you're a new mother.
Oh, yeah.
this is a question for you. I'm a mother of two adult sons, and I remember one time when I was at the daycare thinking about how on earth a son was going to be potty trained, and then I stepped out into the parking lot because I had to reach the photographer who was going to shoot Marilyn Quayle, the vice president's wife, and the switching gears just drove me nuts sometimes. Are you finding that motherhood is a little bit distracting?
I do find that, just because I think that when you have a child, and I didn't anticipate this before having him, there's a new part of your brain that is 100% focused on that child. Even if I'm told, you know, you go off and write, baby is taken care of, if I hear him in the other room, I'm immediately focused on what's happening. Is he happy? Is he sad? Is he okay? And so I kind of had a bit of a pipe dream that, well, he could stay home with me while I ride. I can do both. And it became apparent to me that wasn't going to happen. So he spends his morning at school, and then I pick him up after lunch, and then we have mom and Everett time. But there's no way that I could do both at the same time. Kind of what you said, that switching gears is too difficult, especially when you're talking about a creative trajectory and you're trying to go into the recesses of your brain for some deep creativity. You can't be pulled out of it every other minute, which is what would happen.
So true. Chris?
I want to know, what book are you most proud of and why, for both of you? Georgia, go.
Man, that's a hard one. I have a couple. I'm very proud of Starting from Scratch because I was going through a rough point in my life and I made myself write it anyway. And that one is a pretty big reader favorite, so I'm proud of that one. I'm also really proud of, well, I have two more. 96 Hours I'm very proud of because I set a romance around 9/11, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to pull that off. And I think I did, and it gets pretty good play from readers, and I look back at it now, and I'm like, you know what, I did that. Mm-hmm. And it came out well. And then Too Close to Touch, which is one of my very early books, that one I'm just proud of because that's the one that I hear the most about from people. And I just found out from my publisher that it surpassed a sales mark that not many lesbian novels surpass. So I'm pretty proud of that myself.
Nice. Melissa?
Oh, I could probably narrow it down to one for you. I would say Strawberry Summer is one that I'm proud of, and that would be my go-to answer for it. And I'm somebody who is pretty self-critical, and most of the time when I finish a book and I see authors online saying, oh, I'm reading my book back and I'm crying, or I really enjoy it, that's rarely me. I'm usually so nervous to put a book out because I'm convinced it's not any good, and that I think that's my go-to 95% of the time, unfortunately. I'm working on it. But with Strawberry Summer, I had an affinity for it from the beginning, and it was something that I liked, and I felt like if I were a reader, I think I would probably want to read it. And I liked the characters, and I liked the journey, and I don't look back on the book and wish I had done something different. And so it's a really nice way to feel.
I do want to hear Chris's answer to this as well.
Me too.
Well, first of all, I want to talk about, before this show started, Elizabeth and I were talking about our favorite Melissa and Georgia books, and I said my favorite of Melissa's is Strawberry Summer. And then,
yay,
see, it is a great book. And then for Georgia, it was a little tough, but Too Close to Touch is right up there. But I love her new one, Fear of Falling. I absolutely loved it.
Thank you. I'm very happy.
I mentioned 96 Hours for Georgia. And for Melissa, First Position. So
that's right.
Oh,
First
awesome.
Position.
Yeah. Awesome.
I love First Position as well. That's a good one.
Real quick, I'll tell you a side note about 96 Hours. I'm somebody who, as a reader, I don't read blurbs ever. I'm totally averse to them. I want to know nothing about a book going in. So I did not know that 96 Hours was a 9/11 book, as I picked it up in Provincetown, and I told Georgia, I'm going to read this on the plane right home. She didn't say a word to me about it. And of course, I knew nothing, so I cracked the book open, and I start reading it, and of course, it starts with the awful day in question, and so it stands out to me as a very memorable reading experience for that reason.
I think that was before I knew you well enough to know that you don't read blurbs, and so I assumed you knew what it was about.
Yeah, this was like 2012. We were just getting to be friends.
I want to ask a question. Indeed, it has to do, we'll start with 96 Hours, the research, because I doubt you were in Gander, Newfoundland at that time, Georgia. And for you, Melissa, I don't know your background with ballet, so I'd be interested. For Chris, It would be Ireland, Forget-Me-Not. Let's start with Georgia. How did you research that?
I watched a lot of videos on YouTube. I read a lot of articles. I got a couple of books out of the library. I read as many people's stories as I could find. And the idea came to me from a documentary that I watched on NBC during the Olympics when they had talked about the city of Gander and how amazing it was when all of these planes were diverted there. And I actually almost drove there because it wouldn't be a huge hike for me to get there, but I just haven't gotten around to it. And I'm a little annoyed at myself for not doing that. But yeah, I watched endless videos and news reports over and over again. And it was kind of horrific research because, I mean, it happened a long time ago and we all know what happened, but when you watch it again, it is almost as horrifically effective on you. It's awful. So I did that research all in like a short span of time as quickly as I could so that I could move past it and then try to focus on the romance aspect of the story. It wasn't easy.
It was successful. Melissa, what about you and ballet? I just read First Position, and I loved it, and there was so much technical detail in First Position. Fascinating. For instance, about the point shoes. Could you talk a little about your connection to ballet?
I can. I don't have any dance experience myself, but I have a pretty dense background with live performance and theater. And so I knew the technicalities of the stage and how those shows would be run. And I think just having worked in theater and having been involved with so many shows, there's a lot of crossover between dancers and actors. So I was in contact throughout my life with a lot of people who had a lot of ballet experience. And I think just having talked with them, I picked up some general knowledge. But it definitely wasn't enough to write a book about. So there was some research involved. I believe, I want to say it was Vogue, who put out a YouTube series about the New York City Ballet, and there were lots of mini episodes. They were like 8 minutes long each, and there were maybe 10 of them. And so I got a glimpse inside those actual rehearsal rooms, and that helped fill in some of the gaps for me in terms of how an instructor would speak to a classroom full of professionals who are already working full-time as ballet dancers and what their typical warm-up would be like and how much their shoes might cost. And so lots of little details that I could kind of create a Word document to kind of draw from like a well. And so once I put those two things together, I felt pretty well-versed in setting out to write the book.
Chris, what about Ireland? Have you been to Ireland?
You know, I spent a week in Ireland before I went over to Germany to visit family. It was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. I loved everything about it. The people were super friendly, and it was just a different atmosphere. Very laid back, also very expensive. It was just so different. And, for example, like the hotel I was at caught on fire. Once the firefighters came in from Dublin and put it out, we all sat in the bar and we drank. Like the hotel bought us all Guinness.
Yes, you did.
It was fantastic.
I love it.
So it's just a different way of life. You know, even though I lived over in Europe growing up, I've been away from it for so long that it was nice and refreshing to get back to it and say, oh my gosh, that's right. That's why I love this. So I really enjoyed Ireland and I said, I'm going to write a romance about it.
That was a good move.
So I have a question. Yes. I have a question about Ireland. So I hear that the beer abounds. Everybody loves the beer in Ireland, but I'm told there's not much wine. Is that true?
I am not a wine drinker, so I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not really a beer drinker.
Oh, my goodness.
But you have to drink Guinness when you're there, and it takes forever to pour. Like, the right way to pour a Guinness, it takes about, like, 10 minutes or something. It's unbelievable.
And is it room temperature as well? Is it warmish?
No. Not the ones that all the bars I went to. It was, you know, cold beer.
Mm-hmm. And even, I love this.
Yeah, and even in Germany, it was, I don't know where the warm beer started from, but I have always had it cold.
Speaking of wine, I read Blend this week, and Georgia, mm-hmm. I was fascinated by this wine bar and all the tastings and how the blends were chosen and
the varietals. I'm still doing research on that book.
How much research did you do?
I did quite a bit. I have been a wine drinker for quite a while, so I'm fairly well-versed in wine, but not in great detail and not about how a wine bar is run. So I have a wine bar here in Rochester that I found not too long before I decided I was going to write Blend. And I became very good friends with the owner, and it's now my happy place. But she, like, let me in to the inner sanctum, and I got to see everything that goes into how she runs the place and how she decides which wine she's going to sell and how she teaches her staff to describe the wines to their customers so that they are sure they're getting what they want, what they're going to like. It's so interesting. And there was a point where I thought I would
start taking some classes and maybe look towards becoming a certified sommelier, but it's really intense, super intense and difficult. So I would rather enjoy my wine and not have it become a job or something I have to do.
I'm fascinated with scotches, single malts, and wine. People find all of these notes, and I just basically say it tastes good or it doesn't.
In the same way. As a matter of fact,
that works too, though.
Well, what I do is whenever I have a question, I usually text Melissa, and I'm like, okay, so I'm having this, my characters are having spaghetti, or they're having this kind of thing. What should I pair it with? And then, like, right away, Melissa comes back. You need to do this. How much money do you want to spend? I'm thinking, $40. Let's do $40. She'll tell me everything I need to know. So now I'm going to use Georgia, too.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Well, it's funny. Well, I remember recommending one bottle to you, and you were like, no, you gave that to me on another book.
That's true. I was like, no,
it's like, we're doing this too much.
Is that or meaning the same thing in every book, so something's got to give.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break because we need to do a couple of station announcements, and we're going to play a song. Please stay on the line, Melissa in Georgia.
Came into my life, made me think that I was really something. Took me by surprise, someone with your charm, looking my way.
And that was Joan Armatrading with her song Heaven. And this is the Santa Moran Radio Book Club. We're talking to authors Georgia Beers and Melissa Braden. And my co-host is Chris Bryant. So over to you, Chris.
Okay, well, ladies, you write about roughly 4,000 books a year. And I want to know, how long of a break do you give yourself after you finish one book before you start another one? Melissa.
Oh, I'm first this time?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. About 2 days.
But you promise yourself at least 2 weeks, right? And then you just can't help yourself.
I never even get to promise myself that. Yeah, if I could just learn to be a faster writer.
How is that possible?
It would be set. I don't know.
Remember, we talked about all the distractions.
I'm super slow,
and
I'm on a busy schedule, so I pick up the next one right away.
That's true. Okay, that makes sense. But you average now, since you're doing this full-time, you're averaging, what, 3 a year?
Every four months, I'm scheduled to turn one in. So 3 a year. Fantastic. I'm not fast enough, so no break.
Okay, Georgia?
I am on the same schedule, and I don't give myself much of a break either, and I need to work on that. Here's a good example. I decided my deadline for the book I just turned into my editor was last Thursday, so it was August 1st. Mm-hmm. And I told myself that I was going to take this current week that we're in right now, I was going to take it off and just, you know, relax a little bit, work on maybe mapping out the next book a little bit, but not killing myself. And then I got page proofs back from another book, which, for those people who don't know, is just your final chance to read through the book and catch any last-minute typos, that kind of thing. So you have to go through it, and you have to be careful, and it takes a couple of days. So that's kind of what happens. I tell myself that I'm going to take some time, and then something else comes up, and I end up doing that, and before I know it, now it's Saturday, and the week is over, and then it's going to be Monday, and I'm going to start working on the next one. So I wish that I took more time, but I haven't been able to do that, and I would like to find a way to fix that.
The only change I've made is I've told myself I don't think about the next book. That's a reward. Once I finish the book I'm writing, it's a reward for me to then think about the next book, because I know that my ADD gets in the way, and then I want to write the next book before I'm done with the book that I'm writing now. So that's
I really have to discipline myself.
Mm-hmm. I remember meeting Chris. We were in line at Unity Temple on the Plaza, waiting to have our book signed by George Hodgman and Santa Moran. She said, well, I'm an author. I just published a book called Jolt. And then she said it was up for a Lambda Literary Award, and I thought, she must be mistaken.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. You're welcome. I have a question for you. The Romance Writers of America in 2014 listed 10 of the most common tropes in romance. And they were, and be thinking about this because I'm going to ask, what are your favorite tropes or what are your least favorite tropes? Friends to lovers, soulmate slash fate, second chance at love, secret romance, first love, strong hero heroine, reunited lovers, love triangle, sexy billionaire millionaire, because that's so true.
Who wouldn't love that?
And sassy heroine. Melissa, we'll go with you first again.
Okay, there's three of those that jump out at me immediately, and they would be reunited lovers, first love, and sassy heroine, please, for 500.
Georgia?
I have two from that list and then one that's not on the list. I like the second chance romance, and I also like friends to lovers. And then I am a huge fan of the office romance show, in case anybody hasn't been aware of that by reading my book.
It's shocking it's not on there. You should write a letter. Why isn't it on there? It should be on there.
Well, that was, what, 2014?
2014.
Yeah, so yeah. It's been a while, so it's probably on there now.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah, sure it is.
I like first loves, and I do like office romance. For some reason, I have a lot going on in this book that's actually in edits right now. It's called Temptation, and it's pretty much, there's a nanny. So we have the nanny, then we also have the employee-employer, we have the age gap, we have the rich-poor. So there's a lot going on in this one. It might be a little too much, but we'll see.
Never too much.
It's never too much.
I was going to ask a question of Chris, if I could. She's been asking a lot of questions.
Okay.
I think having to do, Chris, with your author brand, you're identified with a couple of things. First of all, the single word title, that's right. Definitely a Chris Bryant trait.
It is.
As is first-person writing, do you think that that's something, are you going to stay in your lane? Are you going to stick with that brand? Or do you think on those two things you might branch out in the future? What's your prospects?
Well, I really like first-person, and I like that it has really opened a lot of readers' eyes to it. I know that mm-hmm. there's a lot of negativity about it. People complain that you don't really get to know the love interest of the main character because you're always in the main character's head. But I think that there's a reason you're supposed to be on the journey with the character. You're not supposed to know what's going on. It's like you're dating. I'm dating. Every time I write a book, I'm dating somebody new. So, and that's hard to explain, you know, because readers want to see both sides. They want to see the relationship grow and come together. And they're not really getting that with first person, but they're getting something totally different that they're not getting when they read third person. I'm actually writing a third person book right now.
Whoa.
I'm going to try it.
You heard it here first.
I know. It's, you know, the first chapter, I love the first chapter, and I love the second chapter, and I'm like, brilliant. This is the best thing I've ever written. And then I just went downhill, and I'm struggling. I'm in the middle part of the book, and I'm just like, this is horrible. I'm never doing third person again. And
because you're in the middle.
Yeah, because I'm in the middle, but I'm also in third person, and I'm just kind of floundering. I don't really know what direction to go in, so I'm writing about really bad things, and I'm like, I need to change this. I don't need this in the book. You know, my editor is always saying, do you really need this in the book? If you don't, then take it out, or I will. I'm pretty sure she's going to shred it, but it was kind of fun to try something different, but I'm probably never going to write third person again.
Never. Maybe it's going to, like, be your bestseller, and it's a clue that you should go back and forth.
Well, Melissa, you were kind of my little, you were my helper on Breakthrough, because I started Breakthrough in third person, and Melissa was my cheerleader. Come on, you've got this, you can do this. And then I was like, I can't do this, I'm going back to first. So I went to first person on Breakthrough.
But baby steps.
Exactly.
We're getting there. We almost have a complete first novel.
Well, you have to help me during the middle third. It's killing me.
But does it have a one-word title? That's the question.
You know, it does. It does. It's, what is it? Lucky. It's Lucky.
Lucky. All right. So we're sticking with that.
We're sticking with that.
I think it's good. People know you as that. So.
Right. Here's something I do, and it drives my editor crazy. I will actually put my book titles in my books. So, like, I'll always have the word jolt in there somewhere, and I'll always have, you know, some sort of forget-me-not or just say yes or something. Anything that I've written, touch, taste, temptation, and she's finally clued in on that. And so now she's like, nope, nope, nope. She takes them out.
But oh, my goodness. I didn't know that wasn't allowed.
Yeah, well, I mean, she knows now what I'm doing. So now that she's aware of it, she's editing me.
She's on to you.
She is. She's on to me.
Okay, no bad words about editors.
No,
I am
are you
one.
Kidding me? I love my editor. Okay. I adore my editor.
Melissa has a trope that I just love, and something not everyone knows about me is right around late October, early November, I start binging on Hallmark films. And one of my favorite tropes is Woman Returns to Small Town Home After Being Away for Many Years, Only to Discover Love and Happiness in the Place She Ran Away From. So I loved Beautiful Dreaming, Melissa.
Oh, thank you so much. I love the trope as well. I actually love anything where an adult person returns to where they grew up. I mean, you give me a movie that does that, I'm all in. And so the Hallmark movies, they've been out for a while, and I would catch them vicariously through friends or relatives. My mom loves them, but I actually started watching them full-time for myself recently, which I know I'm late to the party. But I always want to go a step further with them. You know, they're really, they're on TV in the middle of the day, so there's often a lot of saccharin involved, which is great. I'm all on board for that. I love that there's a Christmas tree lighting in every single one.
Oh, yeah.
But you oftentimes don't get the saucier side. Like, I want to see the couple. I want to see what their romance is like. I want to see them make out. So that's kind of something you can explore in a romance novel and take it one step further and go a little bit more on the journey with them. And so I think that you will see more of those from me in the future. I plan to sprinkle them in here and there for nothing else other than just because I enjoy them and can be self-involved.
Excellent point. Chris, do you have a question?
Oh, yes, I have a question. What is the most surprising thing you have discovered about yourself since becoming a writer? Boom, Georgia, you're up.
That is a good question. I think it's that I can be more disciplined than I thought I could. I was not writing 3 books a year. Even when I first started writing full-time, I just was kind of, you know, lollygagging along. And once I really put my nose to the grindstone and gave it my all, I write pretty fast. And I think I'm pretty good at what I do, and that's not something that I have been able to say about many of the jobs that I've had. So there's a little bit of a confidence level that has kicked up, I think, since I've been writing. And I think, I mean, romance is pretty formulaic, and I know that that can be a complaint of some people, but I think the ability to continue to write book after book after book in the same genre and give it my own spin is a pretty decent accomplishment, so I'm kind of proud of myself for that. So I think it might be, you know, along those lines, the discipline and the creativity.
Okay. Melissa?
I think that I found out that I'm a lot less disciplined than I thought. You know, I've been in school for many, many years and have never turned in a paper late. But when it comes to this creative outlet, it's a whole different animal. And so that has been a struggle for me, which is funny because Georgia just said the opposite. But, and I think if I were to take that one step further, another thing I've found out about myself is that my conflict aversion is real. And it probably does transfer to my books. I like my characters to be happy all the time, and it's harder for me to write the conflict and to rip them apart. And so that's been a growing and a learning process, that some of my edits in my first 3 books early on were like, they can't just be this happy. You know, there has to be a reason to turn the page. And my response was, but I want them to be happy. And unfortunately, that doesn't transfer to a fully fleshed out 3-dimensional journey between 2 people. So I've had to dig deeper and do the hard work and rip them apart. And there's that very famous phrase, torture your characters. Mm-hmm. And I think once I glommed onto that and I've kind of kept that in my back pocket and pull it out when I need to properly torture mine, that's been helpful.
Yeah, I had to learn the hard way, too, that, you know, you have to torture your characters. And I'm the same way. I want my perfect couple. I want my perfect main character. And I want her to find happiness right away. And, like, in real life, really, how many relationships go down the way that romance books go down? I mean, very, very seldomly, I think. You know, usually you know right off the bat that you're either going to get along with this person or you're not. And so it's real hard for me to come up with creative ways to keep them apart. And usually I do that by, I usually put them, like, in different cities or in different countries. And that works. That's conflict, sort of. And so far it's worked. But I have been branching out a little bit more and reaching for more defined conflict that's relatable to other people. So I'm trying.
I have a question that is on my mind because the national news has been on quite a few people's minds recently. Just lots and lots of stories, and many of them grim, and events that are grim. Do national events ever affect you as a writer? We talk about inspiration, but do you ever get down at what you're hearing or reading, or just have to stay away from it? Georgia, what about you?
Oh, absolutely. It's awful. I find myself torn between the need to keep up to date Like, it's my duty to watch the news and make sure I know what's going on. But then at the same time, I just want to turn it off and shut it out and write my little romance about these two people who are on this journey of love and are going to end up happily ever after, because I need that. I need that to heal my heart.
Melissa?
I follow the news, and I'm not somebody who can turn away from it, even when I want to, even when I want to turn off the TV because it's bothering me. I'm not able to. It's for some reason, I'm just drawn to keeping myself informed for the good or the bad. But I think one tool that I've picked up is I've learned to just use it as a call to action in my job, because I think that there's an awareness there that what we do can be an escape for people, and it can be a few hours where they get to check out from all of the strife and turmoil and politics that we're all facing and getting us down. And if they can pick up a book and read about a happily ever after, then maybe we've given them a nice afternoon. So when things get bleak, I try to use that to bolster myself and get myself to work.
Chris, what about you?
I know that as far as the social growth of our country, I had a conversation with my editor. We were discussing the whole Me Too movement. And, you know, I've read books, and I probably actually wrote at the very beginning of my writing career. I probably did things where, like, she took her and pushed her up against the wall and kissed her. And Ashley's like, you can't do that now because of the whole Me Too movement. You have to get consent, and you have to either put it in a way that's romantic, you know, rather than just say, can I kiss you? You know, you want to make it sound still like in the moment, but you also have to consider the whole consent thing now. That's one thing that I've really tried to really improve in my books. And I agree. There's a lot of stuff. And even reading, I went to Romance Writers of America. No, actually, it was Romance Genre Con I went to last weekend, and they were even talking about that. Most of the people there write straight romance, and they were talking about the whole consent thing too. So I know it's a movement that's going now through every aspect of society, whether it's writing, movies, everything. You know, we have to be more aware of it than we were before. So I'm trying that.
Chris mentioned straight romance. I know all three of you are romance writers, but have you ever considered another subgenre, such as historical romance, romance with suspense, paranormal romance? What about you, Melissa?
I have about 11,000 words of a historical Regency romance that I wrote once upon a time, because I just love the genre as a reader so much, and I'd never read a version with two women before, and I wanted to read that, and since it wasn't there, I thought, well, why don't I write it? But then that was pretty early in my writing career, and as I think the momentum grew kind of with contemporary, which is the lane that I live in, I didn't want to detract from that. I didn't want to lose momentum, so I kept writing what was selling, and I love what I write. I don't want to say that I don't, but it just seemed a little off brand for me. But I do have it in the back of my mind that I got those 11,000 words sitting on an old computer somewhere if I ever wanted to pull it out. So I think if I ever departed from contemporary, it would be for historical. And I know that you're going to pass this question to Georgia most likely next, and I would just like to say that I think she should write an intrigue.
Georgia, are you?
You know, I would probably write intrigue if I was going to go in another direction.
Shocking.
In addition to reading romance, I like to read thrillers. Psychological thrillers are my go-to when I want to sit on a Sunday afternoon and read something. But I also like the element of romance so much that I think if I was going to try to shift genres, it would be something along the lines of a romantic intrigue. I never have, and I think if an idea hits me, I would give it a try, but I haven't really had a chance to sit myself down and say, okay, think about this. Come up with an idea. What would you do with these people? I haven't done that yet, but I think about it. It lives in the back of my head, and I will never say never. I don't know, you know, when or how or if, but I'll never say never, because, I mean, I think branching out and spreading your wings is always a good thing.
I can hardly wait to read it. That's going to be great.
Well, thank you. I think one of the things that would be so great about it is you just read so many of them that you know what's good and what works and what doesn't. So you would already come to the table with a lot of great ideas, I think.
Chris, what about you? Do you have a subgenre you're toying with?
Well, I did write kind of an intrigue book with two other writers, Against All Odds. And, you know, it's funny. When I was writing Falling, I started writing this story about survivors of a plane crash. And all of a sudden, two other characters in the book started talking to me, and it was a guy and a girl. And so I joked with my friends, and I said, oh my gosh, I'm writing a straight romance. That's what I'm writing right now. But then my other characters started speaking, so I was actually able to get the story down. But I'm the kind of person that when I read a book or watch a movie, I'm like, oh, I know he did it. I know it was him. I knew it all the time. But there's no way I think I could stay focused enough to come up with a plot, or that I'm clever enough to come up with a plot that's different. So I can't do it. I can only do romance.
That's a perfectly valid answer.
Chris, I find it interesting that you have written about two things that you're terrified of. Tornadoes and flying.
Yeah, and cooking, too, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
My next question is, as an editor, I'm sometimes so appreciative of a word or a line or a paragraph, I just stop to admire it. Do you ever do that with your own writing, Georgia?
Once in a great while. I don't know if it's necessarily a specific sentence or a word, but usually on the run through, when I'm doing a read back, after I have finished the book and I go back to read from the beginning, when I finish the book, I'm usually pretty sure that it's terrible. So then I go to the beginning and I do the read through, and when I get to parts that I think, okay, that's not bad, or hey, that sounds pretty good, or did I write that? Because I don't remember writing that, but it's really good. That kind of stuff, it helps me go on because writers' egos are fragile. And I think that I can't speak for all authors, but I'm pretty sure that both Melissa and Chris think that their books stink at some point during the writing, mm-hmm. or at all points during the writing. So I think when you come across a sentence like that, or a paragraph, or a plot twist or something, and you realize that it's actually pretty good, you need to take a moment and let yourself absorb that, because we have so much negativity inherently in this job that I think it's very important for us to stop and go, hey, that's a good sentence, and I wrote that.
Is that true, Melissa?
I don't know about that. For me, I'm an active reader, and this might upset people, but oftentimes when I'm reading a hard copy of a book that someone else wrote, I'm highlighting as I go, even though it's fiction, because kind of what you said, Elizabeth, when there's a word or a sentence that really pops out, you're like, oh, that is just so well put. I love how that sentence is constructed and the word use and the prose, and I'll never be that good. I'm going to highlight it. I will probably never go back and pick up that book for the highlighting, but just that process, I think, is making me take notice of the good writing, because I think on self-evaluation, what I would say about myself is I think I'm a good storyteller, but I need to work more on my writing. I think Georgia and Chris are much better at sentence construction, the words, and it's just not for me. I'm more about like what's going to happen and maybe making a funny little silly joke. And so when I read my own stuff, I'm not often struck by, oh, this is quality writing, but sometimes I might smile at a funny line. That might be the max of it.
I agree. I'm kind of in between both Georgia and Melissa. I'll read through stuff, especially what I write late at night, because the next morning, I'm like, I wrote this, and sometimes it's really good, and sometimes it's really bad. I'm like, I don't remember writing this. And that happens quite a bit. But also, when I'm reading somebody else's books, when I was in college, I kept a notebook, and anytime a line or a phrase or a sentence in a book really stood out or hit me hard, I wrote it down. So I have this little tiny index card, Rolodex thing, or wire, whatever it's called, little notebook, and I wrote down some really interesting and just really great sentences that really stuck with me. And so when I write my own stuff, I hate it, and I'm just like, oh gosh, this is horrible, I can't believe I wrote this. But then the next day, or a week later, or 2 weeks later, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was so sappy, I love it. So usually I try to be a little bit different in each book, but I think that I do a pretty good job of the emotional aspect, and that's the thing that always gets me. I usually write something down about emotions.
We're coming down toward the end of the hour, but I want to ask, you all are with Bold Strokes Books, and that's boldstrokesbooks.com, but do you have your own website, and what's the best way to contact you? Melissa?
I do have my own website. It's just melissabraden.com, but I'm really active on social media just on a daily basis. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are real easy places to find me. If you just search for my name, I'm usually the first one who comes up. And so the quickest way is just to send me a message on one of those sites, or there's also a way to do that through my website as well.
Georgia?
exactly the same as Melissa. I have my own website. It's georgiabeers.com. I'm very active on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Same thing. You can find me anywhere. And I pretty much come up below all of the breweries in Atlanta. Then there's me when you do a search. So
hey, I'm a famous baseball player, so, you know.
That is true.
So. And you have a t-shirt.
I do. I have a couple t-shirts. ChrisBryant.net, because .com was taken by a certain ballplayer. And I'm on social media all the time. Everybody can find me there. Twitter, Facebook. I'm not so much on Instagram, but I'm trying.
And I have to say that all three of you, I thoroughly enjoy your posts. You all three know how to use social media. I have to say that Molly is one of the most photogenic dogs, except for George's dog. And, oh, my gosh, your son, Melissa, there have been just hilarious photos, such as the one of your son going out the doggy door.
I love that one.
Yes, it's always a journey here.
Since we've got another minute, I want to ask where you'll be this year. I know you were all at GCLS, Golden Crown Literary Society in Pittsburgh, but do you have upcoming events? Georgia?
I think the next thing for me is Provincetown Women's Week, which I believe starts the 14th of October and runs through that week. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to that. Lots of book stuff that week.
Mm-hmm. Melissa?
Yeah, I think you'll see all three of us at Women's Week in Provincetown. I think you'll also see all three of us at Clexicon in Las Vegas mm-hmm. in April.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the year, there's always smaller events that pop up. But the big one, of course, in the middle of the summer is the Golden Crown Literary Society, followed by Romance Writers of America, which I often attend and Georgia often attends. And Chris is usually at GCLS.
Right. And Women's Week, yes, you're right. Clexicon, that's a big one now. I think the success of Clexicon this year has really, it's snowballed into this massive event now for next year with a lot of different publishing companies, not just Bold Strokes.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate all of you being on the radio. And, Chris, thank you for being my co-host
today.
Thank you.
I had fun.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate it. And you are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.